We need more peace and gentleness in this world, but we can't demand it of others. We have to be it ourselves. Commando Steve. Welcome one and all. This is episode 29 with Steve Willis, or better known as Commando Steve. Hello, everyone. Welcome so much to the Storybox podcast. My name is Jay Phantom. I'm your host for this show. Thank you so much for all of you that are returning listeners. And for those of you who are new listeners to the show, just want to say welcome and thank you. I really do appreciate your support. And I hope that you guys are able to get something out of this week's episode and all the other episodes that we have launched as well. Got so many amazing guests coming up. But this week, guys, we got Commando Steve. Now, if you don't know who Commando Steve is, a little bit of a backstory for you before we get stuck into, I guess, what we speak about on this week's episode. But since 2005, Commando Steve has been engaged in enriching people's lives with proven techniques and strategies that address the mental, physical, and spiritual aspects of our being. Now, Steve is Australia's most recognized and well-respected fitness expert. And we won't judge him for this, New South Wales, but he grew up in Queensland and he joined the army when he left school. And over the next decade, he served in the Australian Special Forces. Now, in 2004, he left the army to launch a new career as a fitness professional. 5 years later, he came fourth in the World CrossFit Games in 2009 in California, beating over 50 competitors. At the same time, Steve became a familiar face on TV screens as the trainer in Australia's Biggest Loser and more recently on Australian Survivor. Now, on this episode, we dive deep into, and I mean deep, into Steve's mentality, why he does, specifically what he does, how he grew up, his childhood, why he decided to join the army in the first place. So what was his reasons for that? His definition of success and how that's changed over the years. I love asking people that question. And I always get a different response each and every time. But we dive deeper into, I guess, some strategies and how we can become better as people. Now, I know you guys are going to get a lot out of this episode, so I'm going to be quiet now. And let's dive into the story box and hear Commando Steve Willis's story.
Oh, Jared, thanks for having me on. Gosh, it's one thing to see it written on a piece of paper or, you know, on the website, but to have it kind of read back to you is another thing.
Definitely, man. It's one thing to also read it.
I don't know. I kind of want to. Yeah.
Honestly, man, I love reading people's backstory, but I also love getting into why people do things in the first place. It's different when you actually hear it from the person rather than you actually reading it. Before we get stuck into all your backstory and how that all got started for you and why, I have one question that I love asking people, and that is, what is your definition of success?
Oh, my definition of success is, regardless of your endeavor or, you know, what it is that you're doing, that you go about it in the most graceful way possible. And what I mean by that is your interactions with what it is that you're doing, and I guess the passion and the intention behind it, but not just to go kind of forge that path with blinkers on, but to be all embracing, and the environments that you come into contact with in a daily sense, but also the interactions with other human beings and just how you treat them. And if you can be kind, calm, and considerate introspectively, you know, with yourself, you tend to have a better interaction with the reality that that you live in a daily sense and other people. Because other than that, you know, success can be broken down into a variety of different things. You know, some people, it's the monetary reward. Other people, it's the service and the contribution to others, and the list goes on. But I think at the heart of it all, and what it means to be human, is those bonds and connections.
That's good. Where do you think this idea of success came from for you? Was it a gradual thing over time, or was there a catalyst moment for you?
I think it's through the experiences of life and that gradual deepening of understanding. You know, we kind of comprehend, we understand through reading things to a certain degree, or it's written on a whiteboard, but it's through the lived experience and that comprehension of the mind that we then embody that way of being. And we take hold and we put in place the behaviors and habits that help to promote that. And for myself, much like anybody else, you know, there's a lot of habits and behaviors that have been placed since we were young. And I think coming to the realization or the awareness that some of those don't best serve us now that we're older and adults, and come to a place of acceptance. And through that acceptance, we can then let go of things that no longer are needed. And then that enables us to embrace new habits, new beliefs, new ways of being. And I think that process is an evolutionary process. It's everything is impermanent, and it's just working through. It's like every day is a new day. It's an opportunity in the present moment to just put a smile on your face and see the beauty and the magnificence of what is, and go on just deepening your understanding behind things. And I think as you deepen that understanding and you transcend is probably the word, through certain things, you've got these structures and these beliefs, and you go, oh, here I am at the boundaries of those. But it's time to kind of break those boundaries and move into the next phase. And then with the process of time and experience, you come up to the next set of boundaries, and much like the ring barks on a tree, you grow with age. And what's left are those rings that kind of show that age to a degree. And we humans kind of show it in our physical form, but I think it's the wisdom that we derive from it. And I think at the heart of it is we find we can just sit back and observe and not feel so compelled to react. We can see things and go, oh, yes, I did that once. And not feel you need to project yourself into it, because that person's at a stage in their life where they may need to go through that to learn what they need to learn to move on. And other times you see that it's going to be a right royal mess, and you do need to give your 5 cents and help maybe give them a bit of a nudge in a direction that's a little more conducive with what it is that they're looking for.
That's really good, man. Perfect way to sort of start our conversation. And I'm curious to know, because you started in the Special Forces, the Australian Special Forces. Why did you decide to go that direction in your life when you probably could have gone so many other directions? Did you always want to go there, or what's your?
Well, when I was young, I guess like a lot of boys, being a police officer or a fire in the fire brigade, or, as a fiery or an ambo, or in the army being a soldier, were kind of knocks about in the back of your mind. But I joined the military to do a trade. I wanted to get my ticket as a builder, and then move on from that back into a civilian life and build houses and work with my hands. And there's something that I've always loved, and something that I was good at in school was the shop classes. And so I joined the military, and then at recruit training and the like, there was a lot of infantry guys that were the directed staff there, and they're like, there's no point being in the army unless you go to infantry. You can do every other job that's in the army in Civvy Street. So if you want to do that, piss off back to Civvy Street. I was like 18, and I was like, oh, I'm going to infantry. And then from infantry, I was posted into a unit from infantry, or the School of Infantry. was posted into a unit that went through the role change from infantry, the Royal Australian Regiment, to Special Forces unit.
Mm.
And there was a period of time where we kind of had one foot in the RAR camp and one foot in the Special Forces side of things. And guys that were in that unit were given the opportunity to do selection. And if you pass selection and the rigors of all the other training, you got to wear the beret and, you know, be a part of that unit. And, I managed to jump through all those hoops and, you know, find myself at the other end and doing that job, which I'm eternally grateful for because I learned a lot from it and had a lot of fun and met a lot of, you know, awesome people who are, you know, still very close friends to this day. And I think a lot of the structures and the routines that, you know, I still uphold to this day, I'm grateful for, thankful for from my army days.
Wow. So what was, I guess, the most important lesson that you learned during your time in the Australian Army?
Do the work.
Mm.
Daily practice. You got to hone your skills. Whatever it is that you want to do, you've got to be responsible and accountable for it. And, you know, I take that into what I do now as a trainer. And much like I wanted to build houses in the sense or the form of what, you know, that is construction and working with wood and metal and brick, I'm doing with people now, but in the physical form, you know, within their bodies, helping them to reestablish, you know, some sense of health and well-being, and, you know, in the fitness side of things rather than, you know, the construction side of things. And the action piece, you know, a push-up, you know, what's a push-up look like? What's the structure and the standard of a push-up? And then upholding that each and every rep, a squat, a lunge, you know, you name it, whatever it might be. Mm. And I remember back to my Biggest Loser days, and when we were first on set and you'd have this fresh team for the new season, and you could see in their eyes that they thought it was almost through osmosis by standing next to you that this transformation would happen and that you could talk a lot. And soon or quickly they realized that the talk turned into work, and the work needed to be consistent, and it was through that consistent effort that the transformation occurred.
Mm.
And that's what I've taken from the Army, mate. The amount of work and that work ethic, which was instilled from before my Army days with my dad and growing up, I think has been one of my greatest assets. And it's a willingness to do what's required. Maybe if the toilets need cleaning, clean the toilets. Like, don't just leave it for somebody else. If there's rubbish on the ground, pick it up. If dishes need washing, wash them. If the bed needs making, make it. Like, at the heart of who we are, we're human.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there's some mundane, you know, gritty, irritable, you know, uncomfortable tasks that need to be done. It's a necessity of life.
Mm.
And leaving it for others to do whilst we focus on, you know, the fancy or the exciting comes at a cost. And what a lot of people don't like is their foundation, the way in which they live their lives on a daily level. And it's boring. It's nothing special in their mind. So they seek excitement. They're constantly trying to get this or chase this sense of happiness, which is a fleeting moment when there's so much that can be derived from just taking care, focusing on the small things. But in essence, it requires work. It requires action.
Mm. You mentioned your father there for a moment, and I'm curious to know, what was one lesson that your father taught you growing up, the most important lesson that you still remember to this day, that you're able to then now teach other people?
Oh, discipline.
Mm.
Just being disciplined and being courteous and tolerant of others. I think they all go hand in hand. And I guess to be all these things towards others, you have to be that first and foremost within yourself.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, our minds and our bodies, there's a lot of tension, there's a lot of agitation, and we all live in our own story. Mm. We're superimposing that story into or onto or through the lens of the reality. Reality is, what is it? It's the eye of the beholder, and we create our own reality from the inside out. Mm. And the outside can change quite dramatically if we work on just calming the senses and, you know, just allowing the mind to be at ease and helping to release the tension. And that tension over time turns into pain and a lot of suffering within the body if we don't calm it. And they're some of the greatest lessons that I've learned. And one kind of another lesson inadvertently is, I'm not my father. I am my father, but I'm not. I have the choice or the ability to make different choices and decisions. Mm. I don't have to take that baton that he passed me when I was young that I thought I had to take and live my life according to his rules or his beliefs and views. Mm. I can adopt and hold true to some of them, but other things, I have the power within me, essentially, to be a completely different person, to even reconcile with the suffering that he may have handed me that he was incapable of dealing with. Mm. So then I can heal that for my children.
Mm. That's really good. I appreciate you saying that as well. So why did you decide to go from, because you mentioned that you wanted to get a trade and do a builder. So what made you stay in the army and not go and do what you originally set out to do?
I think a lot of it stems back from childhood and seeking this idea of acknowledgement, of validation as a human.
Mm.
And I didn't perceive my younger years to there being a lot of love and nurture.
Mm.
So it's like this hole, this emptiness within you, and you don't. And I didn't feel that
valued or loved.
I didn't have a self belief. Yeah, like loved, essentially. And I pushed myself hard to do things to kind of gain that recognition and to feel or try and stem that hemorrhaging or that, or fill that hole that I felt within me. And through doing so many different things and some pretty out there stuff, like I reflect back on my life in the military and CrossFit, I just think, man, how did I push myself and do some of those things?
Mm.
And that was because I was operating from a place of fear. I was so freaking fearful and scared, I didn't realize I was scared.
Mm.
So when you live in that place of being scared, how much more scared can you become when that becomes your norm?
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a certain bravado that comes from that. But the thought process, the perception, the thought process and the emotions born of it aren't always, well, they have been conducive. I've managed to a degree come out the other end and awaken from that, but unfortunately a lot of people don't. They succumb to that suffering and to just that perception that their reality and their life and the like is shit.
Yeah.
And I've lost so many mates, you know, to mental health issues and how many people, and look what we're all experiencing now with these restrictions, you know, from the COVID and the like. And there's a lot of mental health issues out there and people that are in further isolation than what they were already experiencing.
Mm.
And that's why human interaction and bonds and connection and communication and being gentle, as I said earlier, and graceful is extremely important, because we all want to be treated kindly. We all want to be treated in a way that, you know, we can go on our day and take the knocks and bumps, and there's enough of a buffer that we can learn, even if we messed up. without being like, you know, frowned upon and constantly belittled for things. Yeah. But unfortunately, we all expect that from the outside in, and yet we're not, a lot of us aren't doing it for ourselves. And we, what we would like from others, we're not being that in return.
That's good.
We're being judgmental. We're being too opinionated. And I put a little post up the other day in my stories about people who hang on to their beliefs so strongly that feel compelled to get that belief across. You know, they're deeply rooted in it, and it's coming from a place of fear. And recognizing that, just accepting it, and going, "Oh, there you go," and being a little lighthearted about it.
Yeah,
and I think it's it enables you to smile and just relax and ease some of that tension, and then you become a little more rational. You don't be so reactive to situations. You might not even have to respond at all.
That's good. So you went from being in the army to then transitioning to becoming a personal trainer. Would you say that all those things that you were describing before were sort of the same catalyst decisions that sort of led you to going and being a personal trainer as well?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think intuitively I was just following that path. When I finally left the military, it was because I felt there was more to life, and there was so much more to experience, and I guess growth to be had. You know, both personally in an intimate sense, but also in a professional sense. And that's what The Biggest Loser did for me. I had to grow, and there was many challenges. Oh, there was sometimes more fear and that sick feeling in the pit of your stomach doing The Biggest Loser stuff than jumping out of a plane in the military. That's, I think, one of the biggest fears that we as humans have, and is public speaking. And you know, I watch people who aren't so seasoned in when they're in front of a camera. You know, they can talk and talk, but as soon as they're in front of a camera and have to
shut down,
you know, recall a few lines, they fall apart.
Yeah,
and it takes a lot of practice. And that was me at the start. I couldn't string five words together, mate. And and now you can't shut me up. That's what people say. I get these. Some of my friends are Matty Rogers.
You get like, going, man.
Steve's like, he's got that bell helmet on. It's not just the scuba gear, the bell helmet. He's going deep. You need the airline. Make sure you're going to need a lot of oxygen because you're going to be down there for a while.
That's funny.
But and again, being lighthearted about it.
Yeah.
At the same time, because we take a lot of stuff just too seriously, and that's what I learned from The Biggest Loser as well, is to just, you got to relax around things, and you've got to encourage people to think for themselves. And you know, there's two operating systems, love and fear.
Yeah.
And I know in the military, I remember people who were higher ranking would utilize fear as a tool to motivate and kind of instill discipline. And then there was others who could instill it in such a way that they were so much more gentle in the way in which they did it. And the defining factor was they were there alongside you, actioning their words. It wasn't do as I say, not as I do. They were reiterating and kind of enforcing what it is they were saying through the expression of action and rubbing shoulders with you. You know, their hand bleeding from digging a fighting pit. And in the middle of a night, because they it wasn't below them. And that's what I did with the contestants on The Biggest Loser. Like, I would be there with them. And one of the things I used to constantly say to my guys, my teams, was it's all about what you can do when the lights are off, the doors are closed, and there's no one else around. And look, that fits perfectly for this day and age where we're in isolation to a degree. You know, what are you defaulting to in the confines of your home when no one else is watching? Mm. You know, do you have the courage almost and the strength of mind and body to put in place routines, habits, you know, and rituals that promote well-being and looking after yourself and, you know, achieving to a degree the things that you'd like to achieve, what you're most passionate about? Mm. Because it's not you're sitting around on your hands waiting for someone else to put the effort in for it to happen for you. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Ever. Mm. You got to, it comes back to cultivating. It's like growing a garden. You want tomatoes? You got to plant the seeds. You got to nurture it. You got to look after it.
Mm.
And 8 weeks later, I don't know how long does it take to grow tomatoes? You'll have the tomatoes.
Mm.
But if you plant an orange tree wanting tomatoes, you know, like, yeah.
It's not going to work.
I mean, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right. But so many of us do.
Yeah.
You know, we plant things that we, at the end of the day, we don't really want. And the things that we want are someone else's grown.
Yeah. Mm. So I think that's very it's a very important point that you raised. I think the battle of our mind is such a interesting phenomenon on a daily basis that we need to try and guard it as best we can. So I'm curious to know some of your strategies that you do daily that help you guard your mind and some things that you have recommended to some of your clients as well. Because I know mental health, and not just mental health, but, you know, spiritual health and physical health are so important and so prevalent today. So how do you encourage, how do you inspire? Because you can't actually change people. They have to make the choice for themselves. So how do you inspire them?
So, yeah, there's routines, there's habits that I've had in place since I was a kid.
Mm.
I get out of bed and I try to get out of bed before I think. You know, I took that from Shunryu Suzuki.
Yeah.
From a book that was written about him, Crooked Cucumber. And so making the bed, and that was enforced in the army. So I have little like routines I do for cleansing in the morning that are yogic or Ayurveda based. So with neti potting and pulling with coconut oil and things like that. And there's a whole process to that. To working out. So whether that's more output orientated, more yang, or doing yin-based activities like yoga and yin yoga, and also meditation, a lot of meditation, just calming the senses and the physiology, just practicing sitting and being still and just observing, allowing the mind to do what the mind does. But, you know, I think of the mind like our hands.
Mm.
We've got a left and right hand and we use them when we need to use them. But outside of that, we let them be.
Mm.
But why is it that when we don't need to use the mind, we still engage with it?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can let the mind be and that takes practice. And that isn't a social, that's like the status quo hasn't encouraged that way of being. But all of these things that have been enforced on us lately has almost, require that of us because people tend to have more time on their hands and what are they doing with that time? And when they become irritable and there's agitation because they can't do things, well, they just turn the TV on to escape, to manufacture away.
Mm.
When really maybe take 5 minutes, 10 minutes and just sit and be still, just observe yourself.
Mm.
You know, just laugh at yourself when you feel these compulsions rising in you and this nonsense going on in your head. And with time, it starts to evaporate and you recognize that it's just like the ocean. The tide comes in, the tide goes out. You know, you have thoughts, they dissipate. You have another thought, it dissipates. Just don't have a cup of tea with it.
Mm.
And there's a lot of things in those routines that I have in place, you know, daily and other things that are more perspective based, which are, you know, gratitudes and being grateful for things and, you know, taking the time out to appreciate and see the beauty in what is.
Yeah.
You're feeling the cool breeze now that winter's coming and listening to the birds and feeling the rays of sun when the sun's shining on your body. Like there's so much wonder and splendor to that you could fill the rest of your life just observing.
That's really good, man. I love those routines. I do similar things. I get up at probably about 5:30 in the morning because I have a philosophy in life, and that is if I can beat the sun, then no matter what comes in my way during the day, I can conquer that too, because I'm setting myself up for positive reinforcement throughout the day very, very early on just to start out.
Yeah.
And get out there, get out in the fresh air. I don't care how cold it is. You know, it's good for you. Suck it up.
Yeah.
You're doing something for your own well-being. And I've been doing that now for over 5 years. And it's just, I've been noticing a change in my attitude, my goals, my direction, all kinds of things. So if you set yourself up for good things to start the day, like you were saying, then you're going to start to notice a change. But if you don't, then it's like if you don't do nothing, nothing is going to come from it. You do something small, something's going to build and build and build. It's going to manifest.
Exactly. And that energy pools, doesn't it? Yeah. And the vibration of that energy diminishes when you don't work on increasing the vibration of that energy. And you know, what is energy at the end of the day? And kinetic energy. It's about momentum and like the domino, the small domino. You flick that, it's a slightly bigger one, a bigger. And I think someone was telling me the other day, I think in 21 dominoes with the increase in height is enough energy potential to knock over the Empire State Building.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, this is what I've heard. I need to research it. But but you think it's so true when you use that as like almost like a metaphor or an analogy to life. It's you like you said, you tick the boxes, you get up, and a lot of the time it's actioning things before the mind and creates a negative and or some justification. And then the hurdle isn't as high. The hurdle diminishes and gets smaller, so it's easier to step over to the point where it's ice skating. You're just cruising along. You've got a rhythm. You've got 100%. A flow happening.
100%. The challenge is for a lot of people is actually starting. And once you get to the start point and you go, just, you know, focus on the small things first and then just watch it grow as a result. So moving back a little bit to CrossFit. Now, I'm passionate about CrossFit as a sport because I used to do it in 2016. And I got to a point where I was trying to get myself CrossFit ready. Like I was doing 2 sessions a day. I was nuts, honestly. So tell me about 2009, I believe it was. I believe that's one of the earliest CrossFit games. You were part of it. So tell me how that came about and what was it like?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I've been involved in CrossFit since 2004 when I left the army.
Wow.
And watching everyone doing workouts, you know, online and kind of doing the workouts myself, and my times were very similar to the guys in America. And the CrossFit Games was born in 2007. So I tried my hand at it and found myself in the States. I was mixing it with the best at that point in time. And I destroyed myself in the process to kind of finish where I finished. And there was so much that I took away from it. And friends that I've made that, you know, I'm still in contact with to this day. And I really love the CrossFit methodology. And again, that's scalable, from that 1% at the top end to right down to the everyday person. And it's a methodology that I still employ to this day. And, at the end of the day, big question mark, what is CrossFit? You know, it's the eye of the beholder. And essentially it's a number of different facets or modalities that are glued together, and really that opens the door to your creativity and how you want to do something. And really, you know, CrossFit methodology is constantly varied functional movement executed at high intensity, but the high intensity component is relative both physically and mentally. So not working to the point or the threshold of time as your main measure or repetition, but actually a standard of movement. And also being in tune with yourself. And a lot of the time, exercise, and even at the top end when I competed, you need to have an awareness. And that's exactly what it is. The best of the best, regardless of the specificity of what they do, have an ability to remain aware in time frames that the majority of people just cannot react to. Because they become overwhelmed. So imagine the uninitiated getting in a Formula One race car at the start line. You get the green light and go. All of us, other than those that have practiced, would crash and burn at the first corner. We're just not. We would not be able to assimilate in the time frames, the processes, and what's required, the skill to maneuver that car, because it's just going so damn fast.
Yeah.
And it's the same as CrossFit. They can move at speeds and lift weights and do everything that they do because they've honed those skills. They practice. You either can or you can't, and that's the greatest lesson of all. Nature is indifferent, but the collective ego thinks it's above nature. And what nature asks of us is to have the skill required. If we go into the bush, can we survive in the bush? Do we have the necessary skills to build a shelter, a fire, to source water and stay alive? Or if we're out in the ocean with the boat capsizes, do we have the skill to tread water, and were we smart enough to have enough clothing or a wetsuit to, or, you know, or the safety vest and the like to tread water, stay afloat and swim?
And
we either do or we don't. But as humans, we blow this stuff up into stories, and we make more of it than we probably need to. And it goes on from there, I guess. Sorry, I got a garbage truck coming past.
That's all right.
But the CrossFit Games, mate, it was awesome. And I was training for 2010 and had an knee injury, and which meant I had to kind of call it quits on that. And at the same time, I was in the depths of so I had to put my focus and attention into, you know, what I felt was best suited at that point in time. And for me, it was you know, kind of that career and side of things over, I guess, my idea of being this CrossFit athlete.
That's good. I have two more questions for you, Commando, because I know you're very, very busy. So thank you so much for your time. You've been amongst the strongest people on the planet, and you've been part of that group of people. What do you believe is real strength, and how does that translate into being a real man?
Gosh, real strength is being able to read your environment and those that you're around, and be a chameleon, adapt yourself to it. And recognize that you don't need to be front and center and the center of attention and the like, and service and contribution at a baseline. It takes real strength and courage sometimes to keep your mouth shut and not say anything, and to just allow others to figure it out amongst themselves. I kind of learned that from Survivor. People would be creating all this drama, and I'd pick up the machete and I'd walk off into the bush and collect firewood because I knew that we needed firewood. I didn't need to be making my mind tick faster than it needed to be and consuming all this energy unnecessarily and telling myself stories when I knew that we needed firewood. And that's, I guess, a simple story to that. But very much being able to embrace love and that yin side, that feminine qualities that we all contain, regardless of whether we're male or female. And just the gentleness. We need more gentleness and more peace in this world, and we can't demand it of others. We need to be it. And the more of us that be it, others recognize that within us, and then they're like, I want a part of that. I want a bit of that. What is that? Because we're then shining the light, and the status quo, the energy shifts because the more of us then buy into it. But also what comes with that is that we're not utilizing and burning up unnecessary energy and creating more suffering and pain within us. So then we've got those energy sources on tap to put into the things that we love most.
That's good. My last question for you, Commando, is where did that name come from, Commando Steve?
Well, I guess the unit that I was in, 2nd Commando Regiment, which is known as today, and I guess the production company that I was working for on Biggest Loser felt that they didn't want to utilize my name. They wanted me to have this kind of enigma name, like Mystique, yeah?
Yeah.
And I was this person that showed up on random occasions, and I felt that the Commando kind of fit that perfectly, and it was a flow on from what it is that I did in the military, and that's essentially, you know, what I did on the show at the start with the camouflage, you know, pants and the black singlet and the sunnies, and I just and I've always loved Arnie, and I've always loved the movie Commando.
Yep, I love it. I feel like that's a perfect way to sort of end our conversation. Commando Steve, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and for sharing your stories on the Storybox. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Jared. And thanks everyone that's listening.
All right. Appreciate it, mate. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Storybox podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more episodes like this one, you can do so now over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify just by searching up the Storybox. And if you got something out of this week's episode, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts and share it around with your friends and family. Let's start changing people's lives through powerful stories. You can also connect with the Storybox on social media for updates or to send a nice message via Instagram and Facebook just by searching up the Storybox. It's that easy. Until we dive next week back into the Storybox, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget to share your story around. I'll catch you then.